Finding Christ in Cinema and the Great Commission Transmission Network is made possible by the support of listeners like you. To learn more and to partner with us, visit us at gctnetwork.com/donate. On this episode of Finding Christ in Cinema, we sling all the webs in New York as we look for Christian themes in Spider-Man Homecoming. How did Tony Stark create the Vulture? How does Peter grow into the superhero he wants to be? All that and more in 3, 2, 1. Hey, come on in. Admission is free. Grab a bowl of popcorn, extra butter, of course, and find a seat smack dab in the middle. It's time for Finding Christ in Cinema, episode number 156. I'm Michael.
And I'm Brendan.
Join us, and together we'll dig deeper into the silver screen classics of yesteryear, as well as the box office hits of today. We'll take a closer look at the stories they tell and see if we find the face of Jesus looking back. We're going to explore the deeper meanings of these films, the plots and their twists, the characters and their choices, and how we can relate them to the gospel of salvation and ultimately our Christian walk. You're tuned into Finding Christ in Cinema on the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
Brendan, last week we talked about a fantastic film from the DCEU. The DC Extended Universe.
Extended, yes. Okay, I wondered what that meant.
What was that?
We talked about Wonder Woman.
And it was wonderful.
Yes, it was.
Man, that movie was, I don't know what it was, but it had a real weight to it. Don't you feel that way?
Yeah.
From start to finish, that was a magical moment in the DCEU, as it turns out.
Yeah.
You just saw the new Justice League?
Yeah, I did.
You did. Yeah. Will we be covering that on Finding Christ in Cinema?
Oh, we will.
Yeah, out of obligation?
Out of obligation. but we if we cover anything from the DC universe EU, or the DCEU, we may as well just not even worry about the theatrical edition. We should probably go ahead and get the ultimate edition.
I hope that they come out with an ultimate edition of Justice League.
Me too.
Why?
Because the theatrical cut was not that great.
Oh, see, that makes all the, that makes, I don't know. What does it sound like to you? Sad trombone?
I was gonna say kids crying, but I don't know if you have that one.
No, but we have the kids doing this.
Booing, yes, but that would be good too.
When the credits rolled, hey, did you stick through all the way? All the way to the end?
No, I did not. Should I have?
You should have, according to what I've heard. I haven't seen the film.
See, okay, so they played something in the middle of the credits, and then the theater house lights came up. So that's usually my cue.
Yeah.
For like, oh, okay, well, I guess they're not going to play anything else.
No, apparently this was a classic Ferris Bueller. When it's all said and done, the screen goes blank, black, and then something else pops up. That's my understanding. I could be wrong. I don't know.
I will probably end up seeing it again if I have the time. I would like to see it again.
Just to reassess your evaluation.
Just to reassess, yeah. Because it moves so fast, and at times it feels so clunky. But there are some wonderful moments in it.
I think there were too many cooks.
Too many cooks in the kitchen?
Yes.
Yeah, too many cooks in the kitchen, spoiling that broth, whatever they got. It's like I tweeted out this morning. It's like you get a brand new comic book, and you're excited to start reading it, and then you realize, oh, someone ripped out a few pages.
Oh, no!
It just moves. There's like little transition, which was really my complaint about Batman versus Superman, the theatrical cut. And that was everyone's complaint about that movie.
Right.
I probably will see it in the theater again, but I'm not going to buy it. I'm not going to buy the theatrical cut. I'm just going to wait for an ultimate edition.
So as of now, Wonder Woman is the shining pinnacle. It is the premier example of what the DCEU should be.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
perhaps Warner Brothers should just call Patty Jenkins and say, would you please just take over the universe here?
Patty, we really need you.
We need a Wonder Woman. Did you have any addendums, afterthoughts? Oh, and another thing about Wonder Woman.
I did not.
Okay. for all of our listeners here on Thunder Radio, and especially those of you that are passing by Manchester, Tennessee on I-24, welcome, welcome. We are Finding Christ in Cinema. We are going to watch your favorite films and pull out Christian themes that you can use in order to share the good news of Jesus Christ with friends and loved ones. And if you this is the first time that you've heard us, go to ChristInCinema.com and you can get our whole back catalog of 156 episodes of this show. Mm-hmm. Or pick up your smartphone right now, open up your favorite podcast app, and do a search for Finding Christ in Cinema. You'll never miss a beat here. What are we talking about today?
Today we're switching universes.
Oh,
and we're heading over to Marvel. Because Michael,
our old friend,
our friendly neighborhood old friend, one might say. Because Michael, today we are talking about this summer's blockbuster Marvel hit, Spider-Man: Homecoming.
Are you ready to go to the theater?
I believe I am.
Finally, here we go.
Good evening, Peter.
Oh.
You have 576 possible web shooter combinations.
That is awesome.
I can keep that suit?
Yeah, doesn't fit me.
So when's our next retreat?
What, next mission? We'll call you, all right?
That's not a hug, I'm just grabbing the door for you.
We're not there yet.
All right, kid, good luck out there.
Hey, Peter, you coming tonight?
I can't tonight. I got the Stark internship.
What's up, guys?
Mr. Stark, here's my report for tonight. I stopped the Grand Theft bicycle.
Hey, could you do me a favor? Hold on to that. Is this anybody's bike?
Oh, I helped this old lady and she bought me a churro. So, that was nice.
I just feel like I could be doing more.
Wait a minute. You guys aren't the real Avengers. Hulk gives it away.
New move I'm working on.
Not bad.
God, this feels so strange.
These weapons are crazy dangerous.
Listen, Peter, there are people who handle this sort of thing.
Can't you just be a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man?
Let go of me! Let go of me!
Activating parachute.
The world's changing, boys.
It's time we change, too.
This is my chance to prove myself.
We have a Spanish quiz.
You gotta get better at this part of the job.
I don't understand. Yeah. I'm intimidated.
Oh, hey, yes.
My friends are up there. Hey, where are you going?
What are you hiding, Peter?
Yeah, Spider-Man!
I'm just kidding. I don't care. Bye.
There's a ton of other subsystems in here, but they're all disabled by the training wheels protocol.
I'm sick of Mr. Stark treating me like a kid.
But you are a kid.
Yeah, a kid who can stop a bus with his bare hands.
Everyone's favorite web crawler has finally come home to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yes.
Up until this point, there has been, what, five Spider-Man movies.
Mm-hmm.
And
they all somehow existed outside of the Marvel Cinematic Unit. The technically named.
Yes. Well, yes. And that's because Sony owns the rights.
Mm-hmm.
It's their IP. They mm-hmm. have the rights to make the films. And it took until Captain America: Civil War to where Disney/Marvel.
Yeah.
Was able to convince Sony, you really ought to work with us. Let's pull in Spider-Man into this universe. Yeah. It'll be good for everybody.
Yeah.
And so thankfully, we didn't get an origin story. In fact,
the origin story was limited to a sidewalk conversation between Peter and Ned. And that was very well done, I thought.
We're all familiar with Spider-Man and the spider bite and all of those things. And so thankfully, they did not opt to retell that, and you're right, just illusions,
you know,
in a fun way, huh?
Exactly, in a fun and new way. It was the old familiar story told in a new, I would dare say, popping way.
Yes.
It popped out a little bit. It was very winsome.
It was. What'd you think of this film?
I liked it. I didn't really like it in the theater.
Oh.
Just because, again, and Michael, we've talked about this before the mics, but I bring a lot of expectations to a movie.
Funnel fairy butterbar, funnel fairy butterbar, funnel fairy butterbar, funnel fairy.
There's nothing wrong with the microphone.
There is nothing wrong with that microphone. Brendan, pull it up a little bit higher.
Thank you, Michael.
And
is this better?
Alfred. Yes. Is this better? Yes.
Thank you. Oh, man.
Your theater experience.
What did you ask me?
You were going to talk about your theater experience and that you didn't enjoy it as much in the theater. Maybe that's the problem with the Justice League.
See, that's why I'm open to go watch it again. And now that I know what to expect, I can better take in the story that they want me to take in.
Hey, valid point.
You know, but hey,
that's the case with many movies, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
But I really like... let's see. I don't want to say like the everydayness approach to Spider-Man and what Spider-Man is. Like, he is that friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Well, this film is a throwback to John Hughes films. Breakfast Club.
I can see that.
Ferris Bueller.
Yeah.
In fact, they were told, the cast, especially the kids, were told, you need to watch all of these John Hughes films. Mm-hmm. And they all did it together. They did it one day over at, who's Spider-Man?
Tom Holland.
Yes. At his place. He says it was
FCC's very own Tom Holland.
That's right. They said that it was a Domino's Day.
Oh, that's
and they
cool.
just plowed through all the films. So we are supposed to get that feeling. This is a high school movie. This is a coming of age film.
Sure.
Right?
And I think that even plays into Spider-Man's own objective, or super objective, actually super objective, to prove himself as more
worthy.
Mature and worthy.
Worthy.
Yeah.
Huh.
He says, give me the big problems because I can solve them, but he's still a kid.
Trust me. Give me a chance. Give me a chance. You know, I didn't see it in the theater. And unlike a large number of comic book fans, I'm not a Spider-Man fan. He's one of the most beloved characters. Everybody always talks about that when they are referring to Spider-Man. Well, back when I was collecting comics, and that was in the 80s and the early 90s, and I have thousands of comic books. I have very few Spider-Man comic books. They just didn't appeal to me at that time, and it's not a character that I have been looking forward to. Oh, we got to get Spider-Man in the MCU. However, that being said, and as a sidebar, I have enjoyed the films thus far. Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield. I enjoyed both of their depictions of them. They're fun, and it is a fun character. I do think that Tom Holland, FCC's very own Tom Holland, is the Spider-Man that we have always been waiting for. I believe that, to me. But that said, I didn't even know that I was going to purchase this film. I thought I had reserved myself, or resigned myself, I should say, to renting the film, having it for a couple of days on Amazon streaming, and do the show and be done with it. Well, my wife, she says, no, we're going to want to own that movie. I love Spider-Man and stuff. So, well, I'll figure out what we're going to do. The other day I go on to Amazon Prime Video, and lo and behold, the HD version with special features was a measly $12.99 versus $6 to rent it. That's a no-brainer, right?
Yeah.
I'm glad that I bought it.
Well, good.
What an exciting film.
Mm-hmm.
And it does capture that high school feeling, you know, and there are things, in fact, watching the special features there, they showed a side by side, frame by frame of a scene from this film with a scene from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which is one of my all time favorite films. I love Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Beyond that, I'm not familiar with John Hughes. I haven't watched any of those other films. And so that was pretty neat that when they told the kids, go and watch all these John Hughes films, they meant it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
What did you think about, the film overall as a spectacle?
What do you mean, like special effects?
Yeah.
I liked it. I thought it was fun. Especially the New York ferry scene.
Oh,
the Staten Island ferry scene. That was really cool. That was really well done. And even in the beginning of the film, we see these mysterious weapons that have been crafted from the I forget the name of the alien race, but
yeah,
that alien.
Well,
race,
there's many different artifacts from the different. This goes back all the way to the first Avengers film.
Yes, yeah.
The Battle of New York.
Yes, that's
it. And then the the Ultron.
Ultron. Yeah.
You know, and the battle that. Over there in Africa that sparked the Sokovia Accords, mm-hmm. Accords and mm-hmm. all of that stuff. So there's different artifacts from different battles and different aliens and whatnot that they're actually going around and collecting.
Yeah. It's interesting to see those weapons done really well. Mm. But really what gets me is how destructive they are. And especially that one weapon that the Vulture has while on Staten Island Ferry, it slices right through the boat.
Yeah, just like a hot knife through butter.
Yes, a hot knife through boat butter, just right down the middle.
Hey, that boat did kind of look like butter.
It did.
Maybe that's what we were supposed to get out of that.
Hey, did you hear that rumor about the butter on the Staten Island ferry boat?
No, what?
Oh, never mind. I shouldn't spread it.
Hey, so this... Oh, Billy. That... You know what? The old lady from,
but okay. Anyway, so spectacle wise, I thought it was very enjoyable.
Good. Okay, so did I.
To answer your question,
I very much did. This movie is directed by what's this fellow's name? John Watts, not John Hughes. John Watts, and I haven't seen a single thing that he's ever done up to this point. One of his most recent from 2015 with Kevin Bacon, Cop Car. That when I watched the preview for that, held no special appeal to me.
Okay.
He's done a film called Clown. Our RoboCop remake. What is that? Segment scene 6. I don't know. Who is this guy?
I don't know.
Well, what'd you think about his directing in this film?
I thought it was fine.
Just fine?
Yeah. Nothing stuck out to me.
Okay.
Well, that's just me.
Okay. Anything else that you want to say about the film in general, or should we just start doing some shout-outs?
No, let's do some shout-outs.
Okay, FCC's very own Tom Holland.
There you go.
Who we met in Captain America Civil War.
That's
the
right.
Brand new Peter Parker / Spider-Man. What do you think of this young Brit?
That surprises me. I did not know he was a Brit.
Yes.
That's funny.
Yes.
Well,
it's not really that funny.
Well, it's
There's a lot of people that are British.
Oh, well, yes. Of course.
Yes.
I liked his performance. I thought he was very good at playing that young, immature, still growing character,
with the
coming of
naivete
age character.
Yes.
But he was also very good, especially when he's pinned down after the Vulture makes that whole section of the building fall on him. Hey, that's not a spoiler.
If you have not seen...
That's
yes,
not
it is.
No,
anything that you say about the film is a spoiler.
No,
if listeners have not watched Spider-Man Homecoming, if you have not watched it, please stop listening to the podcast right now. If you're listening on Thunder Radio, please continue listening. We're going to spoil this film if you haven't
We
seen
are.
It.
That's true. Well, that's true.
And Brendan just started.
Hey.
So he's underneath the debris that the Vulture pulls down on him. That was... Very dramatic.
It was, yeah. And Tom Holland as an actor was very able to carry that drama.
Yeah.
You know? And
how he calls out for help even.
And there's nobody there. And then
I mean
seeing that despair on his mm-hmm. you know, on his face, and then how he just kind of sinks into the rubble.
Yes.
It's very, very powerful.
And until he says, you know, maybe I can do this.
Yeah.
Maybe I can do this. And maybe I can, and he does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's a great little actor. He was, what, 19 when they were filming this movie. There, Ron. I just did an interchange
there
between
go.
The two terms.
There
and also, one of the neat things about Tom Holland is that, obviously, thousands of young men auditioned for this role, and they chose him because of his portrayal of a teenager. He knows, he's still a teenager at this point, and he can tap into those teenage emotions and the angst and, you know, all the things that the changes that teenagers are going through. But also, this young man is a dancer. His background is in dance. And so he was able to, you know, the moves and I mean, he can do a standing backflip, no problem. They show videos of that in the extra credit, the extra features and things like that. So he was just the man for the job. However, let's get down to FCC's very own Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stank.
No, Michael, Tony Stark. No. Tony Stark.
I love that scene in Civil War with Stan Lee.
Yeah.
For Tony Stank? Is there a Tony Stank here?
Yes, this is Tony Stank.
Yes, this is Tony Stank. Thank you for that. Thank you. Robert Downey Jr. is he's a seasoned professional.
Sure.
He's been around forever,
mm-hmm.
Since he was a teenager himself. And the characterization of Tony Stark, he has down pat. But he is able, because of who Robert Downey Jr. is he's able to infuse the character of Tony Stark / Iron Man with a great range.
Mm-hmm.
A great range. We're going to talk a little bit about the character of Tony Stark here when we get into our Christian themes. So is there anything that we can add to what we have already said over the past years here on Finding Christ in Cinema about Robert Downey Jr.?
Not maybe to add, but just to
reiterate.
He brings a certain vulnerability to what's normally a Stark character.
No pun intended.
No pun definitely intended.
Oh, okay, sir.
I like to intend my puns.
All right. FCC's very own Jon Favreau as Happy.
I love Jon Favreau. I just love him so much.
I know. What is it about him? He's funny.
He's funny. He's endearing. He's charming. He brings the levity, but he also brings that seriousness. And especially when he's at 1 minute, you know, poking fun at Peter Parker, trying to be this little kid, you know, growing bigger than he thinks he is. But then he immediately knows how to shut him down, and then
he's able to play the tough, stern guy.
Exactly.
But we also know what's underlying his character, his emotions, what's driving him. He wants to be accepted by Tony Stark as more than, you know, he started out as a driver. Mm-hmm. You know, I love that scene.
He wants to be more than a chauffeur.
Hey, we don't have to, that's private. We don't have to talk about that right now, right?
Yeah.
He wants to be more other. Yeah. He wants to be other.
Yeah.
That's a great character. Mm-hmm. We could watch that. Okay, let's jump to the big one right now.
Go ahead.
Because we have to welcome to the menagerie.
Yes, finally.
Michael Keaton.
Woo,
as man. Adrian Coombs / the Vulture. How have we gone for 4 years, Brendan, without a Michael Keaton film?
I have no idea.
What did you think about his... Oh, my goodness. This is acting. This is high art,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
What he expresses through that character is perfect for this film.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that only Michael Keaton could have done.
Mm-hmm.
He's got that edge to him. Naturally, Michael Keaton does.
Yeah.
But he's also, and everybody will say this about Michael Keaton, is he is a very eccentric person.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're having, they say he's hard to interview. Because he doesn't even let you ask questions. He just start, or you'll ask something, he'll just start talking about something else and just keep going in that direction and taking branches off of that, which has nothing to do with what the interview is supposed to be about. You know, he's a real fast thinker and real energetic and things such as that. And the way that he portrays Adrian Toomes as an employer, as a worker, and as a family man.
As a family man, yeah.
I think he hit it grand slam,
mm-hmm.
out of the park, home run. Do you disagree with that at all?
I do not. I agree with everything you just said.
In fact, I would say that Michael Keaton stepped up to the plate. He grabbed hold of the Vulture. He swings, and there it goes. It's over the wall. Michael Keaton, ladies and gentlemen, as Adrian Toomes, we need to go through his filmography,
mm-hmm.
and start pulling out some more films by him.
Now, FCC listeners, I have seen Birdman.
I haven't seen it yet.
And
do I need to see that?
I think, yes, you do. Most definitely not with any children around.
Oh, okay.
But it is a very good film. Technically speaking, it is honestly like magic on screen. It's pretty cool.
Art.
It's really cool. It is.
Okay.
technically speaking, like spectacle.
Yes.
The story is not necessarily noble, but it's still a compelling. It's compelling, maybe not necessarily a good story. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Okay, it's still very compelling.
All right. You know, you said something there that reminds me, all you listeners that are parents, go and check the parental guide on IMDb to see if this is something that you would want your kids, if it's age appropriate for your kids. This is really, of all the Marvel films that I'm aware of, this is, they kind of took the lid off the pot of vulgar language on this one. They're, you know, more throughout this film. I mean, none of the, you know, the big baddies in there that you would think of, but just a lot of profanity.
Yeah.
Did you catch that? I mean,
yes. And it seemed to be more like reactionary, you know, this wasn't in the movie, but say you're hammering something and you accidentally hit your thumb, something slips out.
Yeah.
It seemed to be more like that kind of profanity. Still profanity.
Yes.
But it wasn't like malicious.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
It was, I mean, it is very natural, and we've talked about this many times on the show. This is how real people talk, mm-hmm. right? And so just be aware of that, but there is nothing else, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, except for, you know, extended sequences of action, violence, and things
sure.
you know, such as that.
Yeah.
So there's your parental warning there. Mm-hmm. Here, before we jump into some Christian themes, do you think we can pull out some Christian themes in this film, Brendan?
Oh, I think so. But can we? Can I just give another quick shout out?
Oh, please.
On my behalf, Bokeem Woodbine as Herman Schultz, or the Shocker number two.
You really like that guy.
I really did. I really did. I saw him in season two of Fargo, the TV series, not the movie, but the TV series they do with FX. And as Mike Milligan in that series, Bokeem is really good.
All right.
So when I saw him in the theaters in this one, I perked up and I knew, okay, well, this is an awesome actor. I wonder who he's going to be. And then as the story progresses, he ends up being the Shocker. And it's very cool. I kind of wish he had more to do because I just love watching him on screen.
All right. So. And then another quick shout out to Jacob Batalon as Ned.
Oh, yes.
Peter Parker's buddy.
Yeah.
The guy at the desk.
The guy at the desk.
Yes,
right.
great job.
The man of the chair.
And we will see him in the upcoming Spider-Man sequel, whenever that comes out in 2019. But we need to talk about some Christian themes. And also, podcast listeners, you want to stay tuned to the special podcast-only feedback segment.
That's right.
Now, listeners on Thunder Radio, if you want to be able to hear that as well, you need to go and subscribe to the podcast or listen to us at ChristInCinema.com. And in the meantime, stay tuned for news, weather, and sports, and we'll be back to talk Christian themes in Spider-Man Homecoming. For more of Finding Christ in Cinema, follow us on Twitter at Christ in Cinema and Facebook at facebook.com/Christ in Cinema. While listeners on Thunder Radio are getting caught up with news, weather, and sports, and whatever takes place in this break, listeners of the podcast-only segment here on Finding Christ in Cinema get, well, I already said a very special segment.
But where are we going?
Well, that special segment is feedback.
Oh, okay,
here we go. We're going to,
where are we going?
It is Patron Saint Philip.
That's my wee lad. Gimli.
No, it's Philip.
That's my wee lad, Gimli.
Quite right. Good idea. Quite right. Good idea. Quite right.
And mm-hmm. Patron St. Philip is going to take us down to King Philip's Stables of Doom. He left a comment on, well, this goes back a couple episodes to episode number 154, where we pulled out Christian themes from the slasher horror flick Halloween.
He says, hey, oh, no, he doesn't. He says, wow, guys, this was a tough one.
Boy, was it.
Yeah. Once again, you managed to mine a difficult movie for some universal truth.
Oh.
One thing I got is how Dr. Loomis reminded me of Romans 1:28-29 out of the net. From the NET, the New English Translation. When he determined that Michael Myers was beyond rehabilitation and a permanent danger to society. Quote, and just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them over to a depraved mind to do what should not be done. They are filled with every kind of unrighteousness, wickedness, covetousness, malice. They are rife with envy, murder, strife, deceit, hostility. They are gossips. This passage of Romans is important to a proper understanding of God's holiness, that if we persist in rebellion against him, we are in danger of eternal separation from God and the permanent loss of the hope and redemption he offers us, and he alone can deliver. Whoo! I'm looking forward to some lighter fare coming up on FCC. Love the show, guys. Hashtag my wee lad Gimli. P.S. Oh, there's a postscript.
That's my wee lad Gimli.
No, it's a postscript.
Oh.
I have been catching up on the Secret Fire podcast and love what you guys are doing there. Oh, thanks, man.
I told you he was Trixie.
He is Trixie.
Hey, he also left a comment on FCC number 155 where we talked about Wonder Woman.
This is where he says, hey guys, great job with Wonder Woman, a film I really enjoyed, especially the action scenes, which I think are some of the best in any superhero films.
I agree.
Amen.
Hear, hear.
I also appreciate how much it connected with women. My wife loved it, and the reaction I've seen from women has been overwhelmingly positive. There's obviously an underserved audience for movies like this, and it is in keeping with Christian principles to pay attention to people who have been overlooked or taken for granted.
Oh, just like we are going to discuss on this episode.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. One thing I get from Wonder Woman is how Diana Prince is an example of being in the world and not being of it. She interacted with people, related to them, and served them without compromising the values that she brought with her from the island of awesome warrior ladies. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
I think Themyscira translates
to,
from the ancient Greek.
Yes.
It means island of awesome warrior ladies. That's exactly right. Thank you, Philip. She even overcame the spirit of fear on the island from those who wanted to shelter her from danger.
Zootopia? Bunny Burrow?
No, Themyscira.
Oh, the island of
awesome
bunnies.
Lady warriors. Awesome warrior ladies.
Okay.
She had intrinsic courage that was probably from her father and didn't let fear rule her actions. Love the show, guys. Hashtag
We Lad Gimli.
That's two Wee Lad Gimlis in a show.
You awesome. Can never have too many.
That's my Wee Lad Gimli.
Quite right. Good idea. Quite right. Good idea.
Martha. Hey, sticking with the Wonder Woman theme and how women are portrayed and how women are treated and how women are appreciated and how women are awesome, patron saint John Wilkerson of the Wired Homeschool podcast and 10 the podcast called in and left this voice message on our SpeakPipe.
Hello, Michael and Brendan. John Wilkerson here, and just wanted to comment quickly on Wonder Woman and point out the fact that, as far as I can recall, everything that I can remember from the movie, Diana Prince did not use her sexuality as a weapon. And in a time right now where so many things are charged around the sexuality of men and women, it was good to see that she was presented as capable of doing the job rather than having to convince through her womanly wiles that she could get the job done. So that's all I have to say about that. Thanks, guys, for what you're doing. Looking forward to hearing more reviews and keep up the great work. God bless.
Bye. I love that hat tip to Forrest Gump that he threw in this voicemail.
Oh, yeah?
And that's all I have to say about that.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Yes. See, there's something that we can, that we all see out of Wonder Woman, and it is these qualities of Diana Prince.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also a benefit of having, I got to tell you, I was very happy when I first found out that a lady was going to direct this film.
Yeah.
Because I knew that it would be handled in a proper way, you know? Yeah. There's no over-sexualization, any of those things. And and Patty Jenkins will say, hey, look at, I mean, Diana Prince has it all and points out all of her qualities, you know, grace and truth and strength and honor and beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't, you know, she didn't discount the fact that she's a beautiful woman. No, that's part of the whole package.
Yeah.
Whereas, unfortunately, oftentimes, too often, men, and if, I mean, read the headlines of what's going on here in this country here recently.
Man. Yeah.
Men in power, not treating women the way that we're expected to treat them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Lording their power over them, using and abusing and things such as that. And so it's just, I mean, the more I think about it, the more I love Patty Jenkins. And I'm really going to double down on my earlier statement. Warner Brothers, please hand the DCU or DCEU over to Patty Jenkins. She can't do any worse than what others may be doing. Hey, Zack Snyder, it's time to go. Anything else, Brendan?
Oh, no, I think we have talked about this film for a long time.
We have, because listeners here,
there's a lot of stuff here.
Yeah, we have another extra segment coming up at the end of the show for even more Christian themes in Spider-Man Homecoming. Mm-hmm. So I guess the news has been newsed.
Actually, before the weather gets weathered, I do have one thing I want to throw out to the audience. Another chance for some participation. What films are you looking forward to in 2018? Because with it being almost the new year, Michael and I, we want to do another show where we just briefly talk about some of the trailers that are coming up for films coming up the next year. And we want to, honestly, I haven't had my finger on the pulse as I usually
have. So help us produce that show.
Yeah, help us find those good films that we want to talk about.
Yeah, just send us a message on Twitter, Facebook, email, what have you, and say, hey, have you guys seen the trailer for this? I think it looks pretty good, and here's a reason why.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll take a look at it and potentially include that in our upcoming, it's our special episode that we'll do at the beginning of the year of upcoming films that we're looking forward to. Yes. Yeah, good.
Yes.
Now I think that the news has been news.
And the weather has been weathered.
And the sports have been sported. Let's get back to Finding Christ in Cinema. Welcome back to Finding Christ in Cinema, the show where we believe that all the best stories have elements of the greatest story. And we're talking about a fantastic story today. It really, it surprised me how good the actual story is on this film, Brendan. This is Marvel Cinematic Universe's 2017 blockbuster, Spider-Man
Homecoming.
That's it. And it is a homecoming on multiple levels because it is bringing the character into the Spider-Man, the Marvel Cinematic Universe in a bigger way than they were able to do even in Civil War. Now we get to know Peter Parker through the vision of Kevin Feige.
Somebody help us on how to pronounce this man's name.
Hey, Tony Stark or Robert Downey Jr. pronounces it Feige.
Well,
I think the man needs to change his last name. Cut us some slack on here. Anyway, getting back to this story, we have, I really consider this to have, the high drama in here. What do we mean by high drama?
Well, when we talk about high drama, we refer to Arthur Miller, his definition of what drama is, and his definition is drama is when the hens come home to roost. And we all know Arthur Miller. He's a prolific playwright. The Crucible, Death of a Salesman, View from the Bridge, all these epic American plays that really, I would say, even defined these last
decades
of American contemporary theater. Because these, I say that, and you know, we say that, but Arthur Miller wasn't creating anything new. He recognized that in the ancient Greek tragedies and the ancient Roman tragedies, he recognized that trait of the birds coming home to roost or the hens coming home to roost, and he put that in his plays. Really, this is a storytelling technique that's been
handed down from antiquity.
It's a tale as old as time.
A tale as old as time.
I knew it.
Now, the hens coming home to roost is a colloquialism. Mm-hmm. What do we mean by that?
Well, we mean...
It's coming full circle. It's coming back to get you.
Coming full circle, coming back to get you. Things that went unchecked, the consequences...
Need to be answered for.
Yes, yes. Those consequences are demanding your response now.
All right. Well, then I am going to feed off of that, and I'll go ahead and title my segment, The Vulture Has Come Home to Roost.
Oh, yes, yes.
The question is, Brendan, are the good guys creating the bad guys? This is a question that's wrestled with in Captain America's Civil War. Vision even points out, hey, these attacks of these super powerful enemies coming to get us has risen commensurate with the number of enhanced individuals that are showing up now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is that a valid question? Do the good guys create the bad guys? You know, we start off with Michael Keaton's character, Adrian Toomes, and they are at a cleanup site where it turns out it's immediately after the events of the first Avengers film, The Battle of New York, as it's called. And it's always referred to throughout the Marvel Cinematic Universe. All these global level events that the Avengers are fighting against, they're always pointed out. You have the Battle of New York, you had Sokovia, and then you have now at the beginning of Civil War, what took place over there in that country in Africa, and these big events. Well, is it being caused by the fact that there are, quote, the good guys around? So here's Michael Keaton's character, Adrian Toomes, at the... ground zero, really, for the Battle of New York. And right out there, we can see Stark Tower. And so this is about 8 years ago, and he is there at a work site directing men as they are cleaning up this huge crater in the ground, right? And so he's just a normal Joe. He's an mm-hmm. everyday Joe. He's a foreman. He's the boss.
Mm-hmm.
He's directing these guys, and it just sounds like what a construction site sounds like.
Oh, hey! Brad, you could join us. Afternoon.
Yeah, my alarm didn't go off.
Yeah, your alarm.
Look,
just go stack that armor plating like I asked. This is a huge deal for us.
Attention, please. In accordance with Executive Order 396B, all post-battle cleanup operations are now under our jurisdiction. Thank you for your service. We'll take it from here.
Who the hell are you?
Qualified personnel.
Look, I have a city contract to salvage all this, okay, with the city.
I apologize, Mr. Toomes, but all salvage operations are now under our jurisdiction. Please turn over any and all exotic materials that you've collected, or you will be prosecuted.
Ma'am, wait a minute. Oh, please.
Come here, Rita, come on.
Look, I bought trucks for this job. I brought in a whole new crew. These guys have a family. I have a family. I'm all in on this. I could lose my house.
I'm sorry, sir. There's nothing I can do.
This scene where she ends up saying, I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do, which really can be translated as too bad, so sad.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have done that. Well, wait a second. I have contracts with the city. I am supposed to be here doing this. I have the right to be doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Not anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We are here. We're here. You have been dismissed. This is the Department of Damage Control. And we find out as this scene carries on that the Department of Damage Control is controlled and assembled and funded by Tony Stark.
Mm-hmm.
This whole film, this whole entire story could have been prevented right in this scene that we just listened to. Hey, you have mercy on me. I spent money. I hired a whole new crew. These guys need to feed their families. I need to feed my families. I bought trucks to do this job. I have the permits to do this job.
Mm-hmm.
I could lose my house over this. Too bad. So sad. Boy, that's bad. Too bad for you. Too bad. What would this is Tony Stark we're talking about. All she needed to do was say, we understand the position that you're in. And we feel bad about that, but as compensation, what we're going to pay we're going to compensate you for everything. And not only that, we're going to compensate you for the money that you would have paid for this,
mm-hmm.
or been paid for this job. The compensation you would have received that would have paid off your trucks that you bought for the extra workers that you hired. Mm-hmm. All of that stuff, Tony Stark is going to take care of that. Why didn't he? Why wasn't that the answer? Because that is the event that led to the dominoes falling mm-hmm. in this story. Mm-hmm. You know, Tony Stark, apparently we learned in Civil War that things, decisions that he has made in life have weighed heavy on him, and he doesn't want to make bad decisions anymore. In fact, at the beginning of Civil War, as he's giving the all those students at MIT saying, all of your projects are funded, so go out and break some eggs. And then he makes his way backstage, and there's this lady just standing outside of an elevator all alone, but yet she hasn't pushed the elevator button yet. And she starts to talk to him because she had been waiting for him. Let me tell you about my son, Charles Spencer.
Oh, that's Charles Spencer, by the way. He's a great kid. Computer engineering degree, 3.6 GPA, had a floor-level gig at Intel planned for the fall. But first, he wanted to put a few miles on his soul before he parked it behind a desk, see the world, maybe be of service. Charlie didn't want to go to Vegas or Fort Lauderdale, which is what I would do. He didn't go to Paris or Amsterdam, which sounds fun. He decided to spend his summer building sustainable housing for the poor, guess where? Sokovia. He wanted to make a difference, I suppose. I mean, we won't know because we dropped the building on him while we were kicking it.
See? He is telling the other Avengers in, again, that's Captain America Civil War, we need to sign this Sokovia Award. Look at what we've done. We have damaged lives. We have caused the death of good people such as Charles Spencer. And I can't have that on me anymore. I already have the weight of creating Ultron, right? Mm-hmm. And I have the weight of all these. He was going in the correct direction. What happened? What happened? Well, those things hadn't happened yet. Civil War hadn't taken place yet. We're mm-hmm. all the way back at the Battle of New York
yep.
in the direct mm-hmm. aftermath. So hopefully, because right now Tony Stark is not looking like a good guy to yep. me at all yep. in this. All he had to do, he ends up paying for all the students in at MIT, funding all their projects.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on? What's this character flaw with Tony Stark? So 8 years ago, Proverbs chapter 21, verse 13 out of the NASB would apply to Tony Stark. He who shuts his ear to the cry of the poor will also cry himself and not be answered. What does Adrian Toomb say? Have mercy. Have mercy on me. And she says, too bad. So sad.
Mm-hmm.
Let's learn a little bit more about Adrian Toomes. What kind of a person is he? He made the plea for his workers. Later on, they are actually creating and selling weapons out of this alien tech. Hey, you took my livelihood from me. I'm going to find a way to get that back. And something goes bad, and his guys come back in this van that's half blown apart, and they're pretty psyched about it.
How many times have I told you not to fire them out in the open?
Hey, you said move the merchandise.
Under the radar. Under the radar. That's how we survive. If you bring damage control or the Avengers down here, we're through. You're up there wearing that goofy thing, lighting up cars, calling yourself the Shocker. I'm the Shocker. I shock people. What is this, pro wrestling?
Eh, whatever, old man. Come on.
Look. Look. I know you don't give a about anything. But I do. I built this whole place because I got people I have to look after.
Quit goofing off. I'm the Shocker. I'm the Shocker. What is this, pro wrestling? We're mm-hmm. not here to goof around. I built this entire operation because I have people to look after. I have my family to take care of. And we're not here to goof around. We're not here to show off. We're here to sell these things and make some money. Okay, now, Is it a good thing to do what he's doing? No, a resounding no. But they have shut their ears to the cry of the poor. Have mercy on me. I did everything I needed to do in order to have this contract, mm-hmm. in order to be able to pay these guys and to pay my own bills and take care of my family. And you're going to take that away from me? Too bad. So sad. Mm-hmm. That's too bad for you. I have people to look after. That is his M.O. Mm-hmm. That's the M.O. of the vulture. Because he is the vulture, mm-hmm. right? And he's going to continue taking care of his people. And later on in the film, when the vulture really does come home to roost in that epic scene where Peter goes to pick up this girl that he has the sweets on. He's sweet on Liz, and he goes to pick her up for homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
Who should answer the door at her very nice house? Adrian Toomes. The rooster has come home to vulch.
Oh, ooh.
No. The vulture has come home roost.
Is that when it sheds its skin in order to have a newer, firmer skin?
It's
molting.
All right.
Not molting.
And
molting.
So Adrian Toomes takes Peter Parker and his daughter Liz to homecoming. And as they get there, he says to his daughter, you go ahead and go on in. You know, gumdrop. I'm gonna have the dad talk with Peter Parker because he figured out exactly who Peter Parker is, mm-hmm. and he has something to say to him.
Peter, nothing is more important than family. You saved my daughter's life, and I could never forget something like that. So I'm gonna give you one chance. Are you ready? You walk through those doors. You forget any of this happened, and don't you ever, ever. Interfere with my business again. Because if you do, I'll kill you and everybody you love. I'll kill you dead. That's what I'll do to protect my family, Pete. You understand? Hey, I just saved your life. Nobody say.
Thank you.
That's some high drama right there. Don't ever get in my way because I have one MO. I have one purpose for doing everything that I do, and that is for her and her mom.
Mm-hmm.
That's who I am. And he who shuts his ear to the cry of the poor, it could have been averted at the very beginning of the film. Why wasn't it? Why wasn't it? Why wasn't James chapter 2, verse 8 heeded out of the NASB? If, however, you are fulfilling the royal law according to the scripture, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, you are doing well. Damage control was not doing well.
Mm-mm.
And of course, they had that other guy there, the sidekick of the lady, who is just as snarky as all get out.
Yeah.
Oh, well, next time, don't overextend yourself. I have everything in order. I have every right, according to the city, to be here doing this, to feed these men and feed my family. Too bad, so sad.
Mm-hmm.
What is going on? Okay, I'm going to continue just a little bit more. Because there's nothing more important than family to Adrian Toomes.
Sure.
And finally, Peter Parker finds Adrian Toomes in his lair, right? And he's going to put a stop to him. He's going to stop. You're a bad man, Adrian Toomes. You're doing bad stuff.
You know, I got to tell you, Pete, I really, really admire your grit. I see why Liz likes you. I do. When you first came to the house, I wasn't sure. I thought, really? But I get it now.
How could you do this to her?
To her? I'm not doing anything to her, Pete. I'm doing this for her.
Huh. Yeah.
Peter. You're young. You don't understand how the world works.
Yeah, but I understand that selling weapons to criminals is wrong.
How do you think your buddy Stark paid for that tower? Or any of his little toys? Those people, Pete, those people up there, the rich and the powerful, they do whatever they want. Guys like us, you and me, they don't care about us. We build their roads and we fight all their wars and everything. They don't care about us. We have to pick up after them. We have to eat their table scraps. That's how it is.
That's how it is, Peter. Mm-hmm. This is the life that I live, and it was shown to me in spades by Tony Stark. Tony Stark shut his ears to the cry of the poor. Mm-hmm. Tony Stark, who is, well, he goes on in the future, even though Civil War was a past film, right? See, here's the tricky part.
Yeah.
Tony Stark is operating under selfish motivation. Mm-hmm. Even his wanting to rectify what happened to Charles Spencer, he's really operating out of selfish motivation. He wants to purge his own conscience. Mm-hmm. But he's not doing the right thing in this case. And look what happens. Look, that, I mean, that verse is that high drama. Mm-hmm. This verse in Proverbs 21, he who shuts his ear to the cry of the poor will also cry himself and not be answered. That is the hens coming home to roost. Mm-hmm. Spoken by Solomon.
Yeah.
And this chain of events is just gathering moss. This stone is gathering moss as it's going downhill.
It is. It is.
And Peter Parker is caught in the middle of this. In fact, Peter Parker is operating under a different MO, is he not? Or do you think that Peter Parker is the same as like what Tony Stark is doing?
No, Peter Parker is actually, in a sense, quite different. Really just because Peter Parker is still growing. He is still he's still figuring out himself, you know? And he's in those awkward teenage years. He's 15. And he's really gotten to a place where he wants to be affirmed by Tony Stark. Because, I mean, think about it. Peter Parker does not have a stable father figure. He needs, for lack of a better term, male affirmation. He needs fatherly affirmation. He needs that. And he has found that father figure in Tony Stark. Of course, the thing about Peter is that he is, while he's working out all these things on himself, he's quite reckless while he does it. He crashes through
neighborhoods. He's trying too hard.
He is trying too hard. He crashes through the neighborhoods. And we were talking earlier about scenes from Ferris Bueller being played beside scenes from Spider-Man Homecoming, where it's that long shot, just moving sideways, like almost like on a track, but through all these different backyards.
Yes.
And Spider-Man is just crashing into one thing and another. He's like, oh, sorry. Great party. Love that movie. And Ferris Bueller is actually playing during that party.
Which is
scene.
A recreation of a scene from Ferris Bueller. So
exactly.
That's pretty meta.
And he's doing that when he's tracking down that van where he's first seen the weapons. But then even on the Staten Island Ferry, and this is where it really comes, really comes home for Peter, is because he's let his reckless behavior go unchecked, and he hasn't thought about the consequences, and he hasn't thought about putting other people's lives in jeopardy, even the lives that he wants to save. He hasn't thought about all that, and he hasn't really counted the cost. Tony Stark comes in, and... well, like a good loving father does, if you can call Tony Stark a good loving father, he comes in with a little discipline.
Do you know that I was the only one who believed in you? Everyone else said I was crazy to recruit a 14-year-old kid.
I'm 15.
No, this is where you zip it, all right? The adult is talking. What if somebody had died tonight? Different story, right? Because that's on you. And if you died, I feel like that's on me. I don't need that on my conscience.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Sorry doesn't matter.
I understand. I just wanted him to be like you.
And I wanted you to be better.
We hear in Tony, we hear this anger. And in this point in time, a righteous anger, one could say, toward Peter's reckless behavior, his immaturity, his lack of responsibility.
Recklessness.
And we hear in Peter almost earlier, really ever since the Staten Island ferry scene ends, when he's sitting on that just sitting by himself. And then the suit comes up and Peter doesn't know if Tony's in the suit or not. He says, if you really cared, you would be here yourself. And then,
Tony is there.
And Tony is there.
Because he really does care.
Exactly. Exactly. But we hear in Peter that that change from being defiant and not necessarily rowdy, but just anxious into being apologetic and, oh my gosh, please forgive me. I'm sorry. But then Tony has to come through on his discipline. He has to come through on what essentially is a spanking.
Okay, it's not working out. I'm going to need the suit back.
For how long?
Forever. Yeah, that's
no,
how
no,
it works.
No, please.
Let's have it.
You don't understand. This is all I have. I'm nothing without this suit.
If you're nothing without this suit, then you shouldn't have it, okay? Gotta sound like my dad.
And Michael, you know that question you asked me during the other sound clip?
Yes.
We may have to have an extension.
another special
because I'm having segment. I'm having my own
revelations?
Addendums okay. as we have this conversation. But for now, let's just say that Tony Stark, even though he isn't the best person in the world, he still knows that discipline is needed in Peter's life. And it reminds me also of Proverbs.
Oh, it's a Proverbs day.
A little bit earlier than chapter 21, back in chapter 3, verses 11 and 12. This is out of the NILT version, the New Living Translation. My child, don't reject the Lord's discipline. And don't be upset when he corrects you. For the Lord corrects those he loves, just as a father corrects a child in whom he delights. And then that exact proverb is quoted verbatim in Paul's letter to the Hebrews. I mean, in
the letter of the Hebrews.
The letter to the Hebrews. In Hebrews 12, verse 7, or actually a couple verses beforehand, it's quoted exactly. And then Paul, or whoever, expounds on it. In verse 7, he says, as you endure this divine discipline, remember that God is treating you as his own children. Who ever heard of a child who is never disciplined by his father?
Hmm. Yes, I love that. I wanted to be like you, and I wanted you to be better. Mm-hmm. So I have to discipline you.
I have to do this in order to make you not like me. And that's essentially what Tony's saying. Don't be like me. Be better.
Oh, goodness, Brendan.
And that's one way, and Michael, you said it before the mics were hot, that's one way that Tony Stark is redeemed in this film.
Absolutely. In fact, I want to expound on that, but we have no more time in this radio version of Finding Christ in Cinema. So listeners out there, we're going to have another special segment on the podcast only show. So you want to go over to ChristInCinema.com and listen to episode number 156, or better yet, open up your podcast app on your iPhone or your Android phone and subscribe to Finding Christ in Cinema. So that's two times special segments again. Too much to talk about in this, but it's real simple. The one who shuts his ears to the cry of the poor will also cry himself and not be answered. And as you endure this divine discipline, Peter Parker, remember that God is treating you as his own children. Whoever heard of a child who is never disciplined by its father? Great thoughts, Brendan. Let's carry on at the end of the show with that. But what's coming up next time, which is not next week? We're taking a week off for Thanksgiving. What's coming on after that?
Well, Michael, we've got several Christmas movies to look at, Michael, because we're talking about George C. Scott's performance as Ebenezer Scrooge when we cover his cover. When we do his film version of A Christmas Carol.
Oh, looking forward to that, our yearly Christmas Carol. And we have some other things coming up after that. Just stay tuned. All that matters, though, is that Finding Christ in Cinema is part of the Great Commission Transmission Network, a listener-supported ministry using new media and social networking to equip and encourage you to go into all the world and proclaim the good news to everyone. To find out more and to partner with us, visit us at gctnetwork.com/donate. Send us email to fcc@gctnetwork.com.
Or call us on the voice line at 507-407-GCTN. That's 507-407-4286. But Michael, let's say you just want to listen to the good old podcast.
I do.
Which you can do to hear these extra podcast segments. Do so at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play Music by searching them all for Finding Christ in Cinema.
And for all the shows that we produce here at the Great Commission Transmission Network, get over to our official website at gctnetwork.com. Mr. Brendan Taylor, anything else?
Oh, we got it.
And that is a wrap!
You are tuned in to the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission Transmission
at gctnetwork.com.
I'm telling you, Brendan, I think that those segments for the radio show are getting shorter and shorter.
They must be.
I punch in the correct number for our pizza timer, mm-hmm. but it just, wow. Or either that or I didn't expect this film to be as heavy duty as it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, refresh our memory on the thread that you were following there. Peter Parker, Tony Stark, a father figure disciplining the son because it's good for him.
Mm-hmm. And Tony Stark's form of discipline is taking away
his toys.
Taking away the toys. In this case, taking away
his identity,
that suit, that identity. And then Tony Stark actually has a very one might even say self-convicting.
It's pretty profound.
Yeah. He says, if you're nothing without the suit, then you should not have it. And then he says, oh, I sound like my dad.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's a moment, because who else has Tony Stark had to discipline? Nobody. He doesn't even discipline himself.
That's right. That's right. I mean, in fact, I was watching the first Avengers, and you had Pepper Potts. And, yes, it was Pepper Potts and Tony Stark in Stark Tower. And here comes Agent Coulson, just mm-hmm. making his way into the building. Bypasses all security measures. Yeah. Finally, he's on the elevator. Doors open. Here he is.
Yeah.
You know. And what is Tony? No. Well, that was one scene, but actually the scene that I'm thinking of is on the ship, the airship with Nick Fury. No, what scene am I thinking of? Maybe it's in Civil War. There's a scene between – it is Civil War. I'm sorry. So I just planted the seed in everybody's mind, so they're going to go back and watch the first Avengers film, and they're going to watch all of these Marvel films. It is in Civil War. Steve Rogers says to Tony Stark, "You know, hey, is Pepper here?" And he stops. No, we're taking a break, right? Mm. He says, "In her defense, I'm a handful." He knows, and actually, you know, I've been speaking pretty hard about Tony Stark. And maybe it's in this scene right here, or his interaction. Maybe he needed Peter Parker. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
He needed Peter Parker in order to bring him out of himself, because he does act selfishly.
Mm-hmm.
He's a selfish man.
Yeah.
He, everything, even from purging his conscience to wanting to sign the Sokovia Accords, which is actually part of purging his conscience. He can't purge his conscience, I don't think. I think he needs Peter Parker. That's why they wanted Tony Stark in this film.
Hmm.
And perhaps because they had to pitch it to him. Hey, would you do this movie? I mean, come on. Robert Downey Jr. has to be tired of playing Tony Stark after 10 years.
Yeah.
But when they were pitching him the idea, they said that he jumped on it. I love that idea.
Huh.
I wonder if that was the idea.
Maybe so.
Ooh, it's going to be Peter Parker that's going to bring Tony Stark around. And that exchange... You know, what if somebody had died tonight? You know, let's listen to that clip again, because people forgot. That was about, you know, a good few minutes ago.
Do you know that I was the only one who believed in you? Everyone else said I was crazy to recruit a 14-year-old kid.
I'm 15.
No, this is where you zip it, all right? The adult is talking. What if somebody had died tonight? Different story, right? Because that's on you. And if you died, I feel like that's on me. I don't need that on my conscience.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Sorry doesn't matter.
I understand. I just want him to be like you.
And I wanted you to be better.
Oh, let's look at that. And if you die, I feel that's on me. And I don't need that on my conscience. Why? He's got two. He can't even clear his conscience as it is. He's been trying over the course of this story arc.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the extended universe story arc. He cannot clear his conscience. And that's why I wanted you to be better. Don't be like me. That's what every dad says. Hey, don't be like me. Be better, please. Mm-hmm. That's what I say. That's pretty profound now that I'm thinking about it. Okay, it's not working. I'm going to need the suit back, right?
Yeah.
Typical Tony Stark fashion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and man, I sound like my dad. If you can't separate yourself from this suit, Tony Stark has that problem.
That same problem. Yeah.
He does. He needs Peter Parker.
Yeah.
Wow.
It reminds me, first of all, this talk about Tony Stark reminds me about, I'm sorry, let me clarify. This talk about Tony Stark essentially creating the Vulture, what we talked about in the main segment, that reminds me of the Sermon on the Mount. And Michael, it's always good to go back to the Sermon on the Mount.
I agree. Why would I disagree?
And I've been listening to Patrick Mead. He apparently started a Sermon on the Mount series, and I went back to the beginning of that, and I've been listening to it again. And it reminded me of this section in chapter 7, Matthew chapter 7, verses 15 through 20, talking about how we have the gift of knowing a bad tree is by looking at its fruits. And the Vulture is a fruit of Tony Stark.
Absolutely.
Therefore, we can judge properly Tony Stark as a bad tree. At this moment in time,
yeah,
he is a bad tree because he is what created the Vulture. And it's very, very condemning. But like we said, Tony Stark is trying to assuage that condemnation.
He sees his faults.
Yeah.
He recognizes his faults.
Is he trying to repent?
I believe
so. Can we say that term?
I believe so. Repent? Yeah. Absolutely. And so this whole story that is a direct result of Tony Stark and his callousness,
mm-hmm,
that he could have easily nipped right in the bud. It wouldn't have hurt him in the slightest. He wouldn't have even felt that money that would have been paid out to this construction crew to reimburse the money that has been put in order to gain this contract that you legally have the right to do. Mm-hmm. But, hey, I just happen to be a very powerful person, Tony Stark says, and I can circumvent or circumnavigate the system. I've got a loophole, and I'm going to get in there and bump you out. That's how the world works. That is what Adrian Toomes was telling Peter Parker. This is how the world works. And you know what? He's absolutely correct. That is how the world works. It has always worked that way. The big guy steps on the little guy. That is why the Bible, all the way back, at least as early as Exodus chapter 22, verses 23 or 24, right around there, is when God starts the thread that continues throughout all the way up to James, where we are today, that thread of you will not oppress people. You will not oppress people because you will remember, Israelites, that you were foreigners and strangers in another land.
Mm-hmm.
You will have mercy is what it comes down to. Have mercy is what Adrian Toomes was saying. And the answer is no. No mercy for you. Suck it up, Buttercup. Right? This is how the world works, and Adrian Toomes knows that. And so he's been backed up against the wall. Can you blame a guy for wanting to take care of his family?
Mm-mm.
No.
Mm-mm.
You cannot blame a guy for that. You can say what he did is wrong, and we can all agree on that. But dear brothers and sisters that are listening, you can't fault a guy for doing everything that he can when the system is stacked against him.
Yeah.
Okay? That's a fact of life, and God, I can back it up. Okay.
Yeah.
The other side, you can't back it up. You know, saying the reverse. Too bad, so sad.
Mm-hmm.
Too bad, so sad. You can't back that up. So let's get back to this. I did it all for her, Peter. I did that for her. Well, Peter is getting in trouble, as teens are wont to do.
Yeah.
especially teens that can swing from webs and stop bad guys and stop grand theft bicycles.
Yeah. And have a churro.
Yes, point old ladies, you know, sure, to proper directions and yeah, things like that. And he actually spends some time in detention. A great scene in the detention hall where they pull in the TV because they have got, somehow they got Captain America to record all these PSAs, public mm-hmm, service announcements, mm-hmm, for all the high school kids. So listen as they're sitting in detention with Captain America preaching at them.
So, you got detention. You screwed up. You know what you did was wrong. The question is, how are you going to make things right? Maybe you were trying to be cool. But take it from a guy who's been frozen for 65 years. The only way to really be cool is to follow the rules. We all know what's right. We all know what's wrong. The next time those turkeys try to convince you of something that you know is wrong...
Hey, where you going? Just think to yourself, get back here.
What would Captain America do?
The next time those turkeys try to convince you to do something that you know is wrong, think to yourself, what would Jesus do?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. We all know that. What would Jesus do? WWJD, which I'm so sad that that has fallen by the wayside. That's become a byword, you know, almost. Bring right, that back. Bring back those bracelets and everything, bracelets, please. Yeah. What yeah, would Jesus do? Well, I'll tell you what would Jesus would do. Let's get back to James chapter 2, verse, well, we started off in verse 8, which is the big famous one, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have that highlighted in purple because it's the royal law.
Hey,
and so I have all kinds of verses in my Bible that are highlighted purple because they are the royal law. If, however, you are fulfilling the royal law according to the scripture, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, you are doing well. Jump down to verse 13. And this is the culmination of this thread that James is writing. And I do, of course, understand that James is writing to the 12 tribes who are dispersed abroad. He is writing to Jewish believers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's not me. However, there are principles in here that I can pull out and apply to me, such as the royal law.
Sure.
I can also apply verse 13 to me very easily. Well, no. Well, yeah, let's just stick with that. For judgment will be merciless to the one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. That word mercy, Brendan, guess what word that is? Guess. Okay, I'll tell you.
Tell me.
Elios.
Elios. Hey.
Which is the second usage in the story of the Good Samaritan. When Jesus asked the question at the end of the story, which of these do you suppose was a neighbor to the man? And that scribe had to say, I suppose it was a guy who showed him mercy. Right? What was that that you said? I suppose it was a guy who showed him mercy.
Leave me alone, Jesus. Yeah.
You got me, okay? You got me. That word elios is exactly what Jesus used in Matthew chapter 9 when the Pharisees saw him eating with sinners and tax collectors and said, what kind of a guy does this? And Jesus mm-hmm, says, it's not the healthy who are in need of a physician, but those who are sick. Mm-hmm. They need the physician. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. Some translations say, I desire compassion and not sacrifice. That word elios is the active form. I'm going to say it again. First you feel it, then you elios. Then you do it.
Mm-hmm.
First your sacrum is moved, and then you do something. You do something. Oh, wait, then you're saying the salvation by works. Work out your salvation is what I'm saying. And that's what Jesus is saying. Work out your salvation and have mercy. For judgment will be merciless to the one who has shown no elios.
Mm-hmm.
For elios, mercy, compassion, triumphs over judgment. Man, Tony, all you had to do, brother, was step up to the plate and take care of those people.
Yeah.
Take care of those people because then you would have been fulfilling the royal law.
Mm-hmm.
I could go on and on in James, and we could go to James chapter 5, right? Starting right there at the top. Come now, you rich, weep and howl for your miseries which are coming upon you. And Tony Stark suffers much misery in his entire story arc.
Mm-hmm.
And now he has the chance to influence young Peter Parker Don't be like me. Be better. Be better than me. In fact, it works. What would Captain America do? What would Jesus do? Peter hears that. Because at the big climax where he is fighting Falcon and they have crashed on the beach. I don't know if it's Rockaway Beach. Wherever they are, they have crashed on the beach. And the Vulture is pulling up on a big old scrap of this plane. Probably maybe even to smash Peter. But it's mm-hmm. it's pretty epic.
Your wings just gonna explode!
Time to go home, Pete.
I'm trying to save you!
It's time to go home, Pete. He's going to kill him. No, I'm trying to save you. I'm trying to save you. Why? That's what Captain America would do. And that's what Tony Stark would tell me to do. Because I'm going to show you mercy. Because mercy triumphs over judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that great? Isn't it great how what lesson Peter Parker learns? And I think that he already knew when he discovered, well, when the Vulture came home to roost, when he mm-hmm. goes over to Liz's house and the Adrian Toomes answers the door. I think that Peter already knew at that point, if given the chance, I'm going to show him mercy. Right? I'm not going to mm-hmm. kill him. I'm not going to take him out. I'm going to try and save him, much as what Wonder Woman would do. Let me help you. Let me help you.
There you go.
And so here we go. And Peter gets what he always wanted. He gets a front row ticket, a personal invitation to join the Avengers.
I was wrong about you. I think with a little more mentoring, you'd be a real asset to the team.
To the team?
Yeah, anyway. It's about 50 reporters behind that door. Real ones, not bloggers. So after the press conference, Happy will show you to your room, your new quarters. Where's he between? He's next to Vision?
Yeah, Vision's not big on doors.
It's fun.
Or walls.
He'll fit right in.
Thank you, Mrs. Stark. But I'm good.
You're good? Good. How are you good?
But I'd rather just stay on the ground for a little while. Friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Somebody's got to look out for the little guy, right?
You're turning me down? You better think about this. Look at that. Look at me. Last chance, yes or no?
No.
Okay. It's kind of a Springsteen-y, working class hero vibe that I dig. Happy will take you home. Yeah?
Yeah.
Some great stuff in that clip. I love that Tony Stark says, hey, yeah, that's kind of a Springsteen-y, working man vibe, which is the exact opposite of what Tony Stark does.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But Peter wants to do that. He wants to look out for the little guy. I think that the plight of Adrian Toomes made an impression on him. I think that Peter Parker can see in his little 15-year-old heart, he's got a point. He's got a point. He's not lying.
Yeah.
It's just how he went about rectifying that, which mm-hmm. is wrong. Adrian Toomes is going to do whatever he has to do to care for his family. Because nothing is more important than family, Peter. And because you saved my daughter, I'll always be in debt for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty powerful story, Brendan. And a lot of things that are actually kind of mirror the current situation that we have here in the U.S. of A.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the conversation that's taking place in the U.S. of A. Do you have any questions, comments, piggybacks, editorials, off-the-wall remarks, anything else?
No, I think we got it.
All right. Do you feel comfortable with this?
I do.
All right.
Yeah.
Hey, listeners, we gave you all the way to contact us. All the way.
All
we
the ways.
All the way. Contact us. All the way.
All
no,
the
that
way.
That wasn't good at all.
Contact all the way.
Contact all the way. Oh, what fun it is to send in voicemails all day. Hey.
Hey.
You know how to contact us. Give us your thoughts. What Christian themes did you find in Spider-Man Homecoming? Do you think we're off the wall here? Do you think that we just totally just left the reservation in some of the things that we were saying?
I don't think so.
That's a rhetorical question. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Contact us and we will talk to you next time right here on Finding Christ in Cinema.
Quite right. Good idea. Quite right. Good idea. Quite right.
Yeah. Oh, one more. One more.
Funnel fairy butterbar, funnel fairy butterbar, funnel fairy butterbar, funnel fairy. There's nothing wrong with the microphone.
Brendan, you got to get over that fear of the microphone.
I'm not afraid of it.